Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
There's disembodied voices in here, and I'm not wearing pants still.
Well, I am on the... I am choosing whatever feed I'm looking at. I can see Norm or myself, but not both at the same time. And I'm sitting on my bus in Newark, New Jersey.
Wow. Okay. You've been from North Carolina, I think, when we talked to you last.
Yeah.
Where you guys were rehearsing and did your first show.
Yeah.
And you've been to Virginia, Maryland, and now New Jersey, up the coast.
Yes, I was in Worcester, Massachusetts last night. Hmm.
What's the Worcester crowd like? Is it an unruly crowd? You know, I expect a little bit of a heckle from a Massachusetts crowd.
We got a Michael Stevens got a heckle from someone about him being bald, which was hilarious. But the crowd was super warm. The crowd was lovely. It was a sold out show last night. To the rafters. We had about like 10 or 15 single seats left at the end of the night. But it was a phenomenal show, a fantastic crowd. I'm having so much fun doing this show.
That's awesome. What, you're now four shows in? How are you feeling about...
I think
six
shows in.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Okay.
Do you have like a whiteboard on the wall of your bus with like X's over the days, or is it not to that point of the... You have a while before you get to that point of the tour, I assume, right? The I'm ready to come home.
You know, I have every date entered on my calendar. So when I open up my main Calendgoo, I just see it all there, how many days are left. Thing One is going to join me on tour in 5 or 6 days.
Oh,
probably
cool.
For about a week. And then I think shortly after that, Thing Two will join me. And hopefully Mrs. Don't Try This shortly after that.
Awesome.
Norm, I don't understand why you haven't turned the lights in the cabinets behind you on. I find the space so depressing when those are off.
Oh. Uh-oh. They'll be on next time. Yes.
It doesn't make the video look any like super awful. I just find the space to be in super oppressive when those are off.
It's oppressive when you're not here also, Adam, physically.
Aww,
only spiritually, yeah. But I'm in good company with all the props and the characters here.
Oh, good. I miss my job.
I mean, all the time you spent there, I'm sure it's weird to be away now. So, hey, can we talk about the thing that Norm and I did a couple of nights ago?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
We went to an escape room in Japantown called Escape from the Puzzle Room. And I think, Norm, I've talked about escape rooms before because I've done a bunch over the years. But I think this was your first time, right?
It was my very first time doing an escape room, and it was an amazing experience. I've been thinking about it for the past couple of days. Adam, have you done one of these before?
I have never done one before.
Oh, man, we've got to get you to do one when you're back, because there's a bunch in town now, and we can find one that nobody's done, and we'll all go together.
Fabulous. I would love to do that.
Go ahead, Norm. Like, what was your takeaway? I'm interested in like what was compelling about it to you.
I mean, the whole concept. I think when the escape rooms started their rise in popularity, they really were born out of maybe like the Saw movies. The idea that you're trapped in a room, and then on the surface, that's what it is. Like you're trapped in a room for an hour, and you with a group of, you know, maybe a dozen people or so. In our case, it was all friends, people who knew each other. We went for Jeremy's birthday, actually. But we have an hour to solve a series of puzzles to find the key and escape the room. And every room is different. But it really, as someone who's been playing video games and adventure games and has done puzzle solving by himself digitally, the tangibility of the puzzles and the urgency of having that time limit really made it a exciting and really tangible, visceral experience. And the puzzle design was, I thought, fantastic.
So I think that they came from those... Do you remember the old Japanese arcade, like the Viridian Room and the Flash games? I think that that's where this idea originated. I don't think it came from Saw and those kinds of horror movies. But yeah, the thing that I love about it is that you're... all the things that you're presented with are novel problems usually. So your brain is having a completely new experience, and even if you've done a puzzle that's similar, like there was a maze in the one that we did that was similar to mazes that I think everybody has seen before and that we all did in elementary school, but the way that they set it up was such to that it really rewarded kind of multiple people working out on it, which most puzzles that we do as a society kind of don't. Most puzzles are designed to be kind of solitary experiences, and when you have stuff that's designed for 5 or 6 or 10 people to work on together, it makes it really interesting.
Wow.
And within the confines of a physical space too. I mean, I if you lay out all the puzzles individually, and I would say there are maybe like about a dozen different types of puzzles, but for the puzzle creators to layer them in the space of a 20-foot by 20-foot room, to require that you walk around the space, pick up objects, remember why, think about why objects are placed where they're placed, and then have these, design it so you have these revelatory moments where someone can say, oh, that's the reason why that's there. Everything is designed. That's something that was really, really interesting.
Well, and like the initial thing that you do when you walk into the room is try to figure out what the puzzle is, right? Like that is that the first puzzle is where do you start? Like what are the different pieces of this thing and figuring all that stuff out. So there's like a scavenger hunt element. There's usually the designers have like physical space puzzles, spatial puzzles, word puzzles, math puzzles, usually some kind of cryptography thing. And there's a lot of different opportunities for people to kind of like, if you're good at math puzzles but are terrible at rebuses, then there will almost always be something. There should always be something for you to do. So, just for the record, like a lot of the ones that people see at the beginning are places where they go lock you in a room. There's always an emergency out. They're not actually going to leave you in the room if somebody has a panic attack or something like that. Because I know
there's a safe word.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of them now are starting to not actually be rooms that they lock you in. So I did one a few weeks ago at a conference that a friend of mine did that was just a briefcase. So you split up into teams and each team got a briefcase, and then you had to you stepped through it from there, first figuring out how to open the briefcase and then going through a series of puzzles to get the answer. And at the end you know, so they're I think the defining characteristic isn't that you're locked in a room. I think it's that you have this series of collaborative, massively connected puzzles that require multiple brains working on different things to solve.
That sounds so difficult to design for.
I have a couple of friends. We're working with some people on Foo that do this stuff. And if you would like to talk to them, I'd love to introduce you, because it is a fascinating design challenge. And I think that like not enough people are talking about that stuff yet, because I don't think most people realize it.
Yeah, no, we often ran into trouble on MythBusters about designing challenges for Jamie or I to solve, because in some ways the only people qualified to design a challenge for us to solve is each other.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, within the confines of our universe there, and like. So we did that. And actually, sorry, I tell a lie. At one point, Cary Grant and Tori designed a MacGyver-type escape for Jamie and I. And they included enough material for us to set up a... how did this work? They gave enough material for us to set up or, like, shoot a flare at an incoming helicopter to signify that we were there, and we ended up using the materials to make a kite that worked better. It was really
cool. So that's like that whole concept. Like my Sandy, my friend who does this, says that like the worst case scenario for him is that if a group of people who all are writers come in, because then, you know, or all mathematicians or something like that, because then you have people who presumably all have some sort of affinity for words, and the wordplay puzzles will go really quickly, but maybe the spatial one will take longer. The interesting thing, like figuring out people's solutions, like Norm had some really interesting solutions where he just like looked at the puzzle and metagamed and skipped ahead and figured out what the solution was, which is exactly what you're supposed to do. It was really good.
Oh my god, yeah. It sounds like so much fun. I know that Julia would love that kind of thing too.
And I would recommend going really with people you know. Like we want to find a group of 10 or 12 people, because I know a lot of these rooms are set up and these events are set up for team building or for, I mean, sometimes people go, Will's done a bunch where you and someone were just like the only people who knew each other. And there's the first 10 minutes of just the social awkwardness. I know it's designed into the puzzle solving, but you know, I want to get into the puzzle solving. And I think it's like, you don't want to risk being in an environment where like no one's going to take leadership, or it's not going to be satisfactory because you're not getting to the heart of the puzzles and you're just trying to get through the social awkwardness.
Well, I mean, the thing I'll say is that if you're in a group that's full of randoms, like it's a group of couples, like four or five couples or trios, then usually the people that run the puzzle during the kind of outside the room orientation period spend more time with you than they did with us. So like they'll talk to each other and they'll go around the room and they'll get people to talk about what kind of puzzles they like doing and things like that. And that tends to accelerate that process because and typically there's somebody in the room that kind of nudges you. If the group gets stuck or people are getting frustrated or whatever, then there is a human there to kind of intervene and move things along. And they'll help with that. They'll say, you know, one of the ones I was in, they actually said, hey, somebody should probably be kind of keeping an eye on the overall picture, right? Because it was all people who were new at it and didn't know what was going on. So, like, if you don't have a group of 12 people, I would definitely not dissuade you from trying one of these if there's one in your area.
Oh, no, I can assemble a team.
Yeah. I know one of our friends in the East Bay would definitely be into it. He did the one in the briefcase with me and is, I'm pretty sure, hooked. So,
Well, also, the total team of tested contributors right now is about a dozen as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, and my wife will come back and do it anytime. She was super into it. It was her first time, too.
Oh,
and that's the thing. Like, when you do these things together, like we had a group, we did this, but sharing this experience, even relaying it after we were finished with it, like, I just wanted to tell people about it, but at the same time, I didn't want to spoil the experience. So, like, I wish there was a way to document it and go back and analyze what we did. I know for a fact that people are doing like escape room, they're trying to design escape rooms for television as a format. But that's gonna be tough to design puzzles over and over and over again.
Yeah, well, so the model for that I find most amazing is the American Ninja Challenge, a test so difficult nobody solved it for 4 years.
Yeah.
But with that, the challenges are self-explanatory. So you can look
totally.
You can look at those lily pads and know, man, that would be really hard to jump across that. If you're looking at some sort of really like algebra puzzle, basically, how do you convey that in 20 seconds so the TV audience can, like, that's hard.
That no, just means yeah,
you're
sure.
Have to change the puzzles.
I totally and it's not to say that's the right model, but I was also surprised at how sustainable a show was that no one won for a long time.
Oh, it was great because no one won it. I mean, that was as soon as somebody started, as soon as people started winning, it got much less interesting to me.
You know, I always personally, just on a side note, I always personally wanted to try Wipeout.
Wipeout
is sort of the cartoon version of American Ninja Challenge, where you're running across large padded bridges that are spinning and stuff. And
right. And they put the funky sound effects, like when you get knocked into the water, like, ooh.
Yeah.
What about that one that I think Fox did, Hole in the Wall?
That's my
the
favorite.
One. Yeah.
Oh my god.
We had a real hole in the wall phase, Norm.
Oh,
do you know what hole in the wall is?
Oh, I totally know what hole in the wall is. It's a source of endlessly great gifts.
Yeah. Oh
yes.
My god. Yeah, the giant styrofoam wall with the cutouts, and you have to make your body in the shape of the cutout, and or else you get knocked in the, it's terrific. That and the tennis ball cannon on American Gladiators are the, like, I would love to fire the tennis ball cannon on American Gladiators just one time.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be fun.
Let's see what else is going on. What Norm?
You know, something I want to talk about that we haven't had a chance to because we've been traveling, but it's been going on in a bunch of different states, is Right to Repair.
Mm. Yes.
There's a legislation that's trying to get passed in, I think, I want to say five different states right now for Right to Repair, which is the idea that manufacturers should, and they don't, allow third-party repair shops or even end users to buy the supplies or even get the information needed to repair the hardware, the consumer electronics that they own.
And we're mostly talking about electronics companies like Apple and Microsoft and HP, and they're all resisting this and putting tons and tons of dough into these. I think it's, is it Nevada that's the farthest along right now?
Yeah, it's like Nebraska or Nevada.
Nebraska, right. So they're pumping millions in there right now because they enjoy a very lucrative monopoly on repair.
Right, when you think about the Apple Store, which is the perfect example of this, right? The Apple Store, it exists not just to sell you things, because they can sell you online, not as a showroom, but really the Genius Bar is where they make all the money, where people have to come in and you're paying $200 for a cracked screen, when companies like iFixit, they can't even get access to those screens.
Right.
Because there's no third-party official repair system. And so we're talking about cell phones and TVs, and I think a lot of the manufacturers, their big two arguments against rights to repair is, one, they think it's unsafe, which is, I think that's a crock argument. Like, yes, there are capacitors in TVs, but we're not just talking about end users. We're talking about trained professionals, in many cases, who are running mom-and-pop shops, who have the expertise.
There's an argument with lithium-ion batteries that as we've all seen, that maybe, like, if you don't know what you're doing, you can poke a battery and cause damage and hurt yourself or hurt other people. But you're right. For the most part,
it's a non-issue.
And mom-and-pop shops,
we're bringing
for sure.
We're talking about electronics here, but another key player in this is John Deere. And the implications of John Deere's not allowing farmers who own their tractors to repair their own tractors until they get a licensed John Deere repairman in can cost a farmer tremendous amounts of lost time, lost wages, lost crops.
Absolutely.
And I mean, this is something, like, I'm sure you guys have both gone to, like, AutoZone or Kragen or whatever and bought those unauthorized repair manuals for your car when you needed to figure out how to change a fuel filter or something, right?
Yeah.
And there's a infrastructure for that, but for phones, especially if you don't live in a major urban center, it's really hard to get your phone repaired if you break it. Like, when my dad smashed his phone screen, he had to drive 2 hours to the nearest Apple store, which is it's just not realistic for most people.
The automobile industry is the perfect analogy for this. I think it would be, we could not imagine a world where you bought a car and you had to take it to the dealer anytime you want to do anything
for the rest of the car's natural life.
Exactly. And if you changed a windshield yourself, you would void the entire warranty for the car.
Well, they do that, just to be clear. Like, if you get a non-authorized windshield and then the windshield leaks, they're not going to cover that part of the warranty.
But in some cases, for electronics, like for video game consoles, right, where they have, or if you open a phone, you see those stickers that say if you break this seal, your entire warranty is voided. That's illegal, I think, in many states, I think, according to a 1975 act.
Really?
But no one's been able to contest it because it's expensive.
It goes right to the heart of what this is really about, because you could listen to this argument and be like, well, if Apple's the best at repairing it, maybe they should repair it. No, the secret sauce here is that this goes right to what it means to own something, and the fungibility of what it means to own something. Electronics companies are attempting to make a gray area there. Because for them, it would be much better if they licensed you your nice piece of hardware rather than you own it and you have the right to do what you want with it. They would like to restrict those rights. I mean, up to and including John Deere, not only not allowing you to fix your own tractor, but actually gathering data about your farming techniques through your tractor, and you don't necessarily have access to the data the tractor's collecting about you. And yet John Deere and other companies like that are taking that data and using it as another revenue stream. They're selling it to other companies so that they have better data about how the equipment is being used. And again, this all comes back to what we own, our data, our electronics, our machines that we purchase.
Well, this is the nightmare dystopia that Cory Doctorow has been screaming about for 2 decades. So congratulations, guys. We're there.
And they try to build it into the EULAs, into the end user license agreements. But a lot of consumers just, they don't know that they have these, we have the right to take apart hardware, repair hardware. And I think philosophically, we would agree that like taking apart hardware, it would actually, for the iFixit guys, you don't own something unless you've taken it apart and put it back together. And I think you're right, Adam, like companies like Apple, they want to lease you things. They don't want. They want you to be the product, and they want you to pay for you to be the product.
Right.
And, well, I mean, yeah. Oh, go ahead, Adam.
No. I was just about to agree vigorously with Norm. To me, I purchase a piece of hardware. I have spent my whole life making my toys better by taking them apart and adding features. And it's not like there are things I'm itching to add to the iPhone, but by every means necessary, if this screen cracks, I should be able to purchase a replacement kit online and repair it myself.
Well, right. I mean, that's just it. Apple is a weird example for this because we live in San Francisco where there's like 16 Apple stores, yeah. And it, you know, probably all have Apple Care. So when we smash our screen, we just go in and pay them $50 and they give us a new screen. But swapping a screen on an iPhone is a relatively easy thing that pretty much anybody who has decent fine motor controls and the right screwdriver can do. It's not hard. Like, you pop the old one off, you take the Touch ID sensor off, you unhook all the cables, and then you put the cables back where they were. And like, the odds of, if you're relatively careful and you can say, you know, screw the screws on your eyeglasses back in if they fall out without scratching up the lenses or the frames, you're probably okay fixing an iPhone. Same thing for stuff like dishwashers. The motor in my dishwasher just broke, and I'm looking at $500 to have somebody come do it, or $250 to get the part and do it myself. And I'd rather have the $250 and blow the afternoon. Wrestling with the dishwasher. I think I haven't entirely decided on that. If you guys want to prove that right to repair is important, you should come over to the house, fix my dishwasher. We'll make a video and let everybody know.
Will, that's great. I will cancel the tour right now and I'll be at your house tomorrow.
Awesome. Okay, perfect. I'm only available from 8 until 11. After that, I'm pretty booked, but I'll be around Tuesday from noon to 3. So
you're going to restrict. Wow. Okay.
You just Comcasted him.
I gave you the Comcast window.
You know, I might have said this on the podcast years ago, but there used to be this Comcast commercial where the Comcast repairman was like driving in his truck while talking to the camera. And he was like, at Comcast, we're committed to the best customer service. That's why when we say we're going to be there, we'll be there exactly when we say we will. And then he pulls up to a house and looks at a clipboard, and it says, and he looks at it and turns to the camera and goes, right on time. Now, back then, Comcast's thing was, we'll show up between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m., right?
Yeah.
And so I was thinking, what does his clipboard look like? Is it a 24-hour schedule with just this giant red zone? It's like, anywhere in here is okay.
Here are six houses. I've got to get to
them all.
That's
my little comedy bit about Comcast and their scheduling.
Yeah.
Wow, I really killed the conversation there.
No, I have a funky... I switched just from... I just got fiber internet at my house. And there was a gray period where I was still paying for Comcast and their internet, but all my computers in my house were connected to Sonic, to fiber, and Comcast must have known because my usage went from real high to nothing, and I got 5 calls within the week, almost one every day from a customer service person trying to get me to stay on, and it was very satisfying to say no thank you, I want to cancel my service. Yeah.
Nice.
So they were watching my usage, and they deduced that this person now has access to different internet, and they're suddenly not using their internet. They're going to be canceling soon.
Gross.
Is it,
damage control.
Is it in San Francisco, is it Monkey Brains that's line of sight, that does the line of sight internet?
Monkey Brains does line of sight to Sutro Tower, I think. Or maybe the hill south of Noe.
Okay.
Starts with a B.
Bernal Hill.
The one, yeah.
That's Bernal Hill.
Bernal, yeah. I think they do line of sight to Bernal. Because we could have gotten that at the last tested office and only didn't because they had usage limits because it's wireless.
I just got, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Adam.
Oh, I was just saying, I just got the Eero, the mesh network, wireless in my house.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
Eero?
Do you
like it? Yeah, that's Eero.
Yes. I love it. We've got, we now get it in all the corners of the house instead of just in the main central column of the house.
Did you have trouble setting it up, or was it relatively straightforward? Or did you get your IT team to do it?
They sent a guy. They sent a guy.
Oh, okay. It's a little bit of a unique situation, then.
Yeah, they sent a guy.
Adam, have you had an off day yet? Have you had a day off from the tour to do any things on your list of things you wanted to do?
No, I have. I've gotten out in each city on the one wheel and rode around a little bit. Today is my sixth day, so it's the end of my first week. So tomorrow is a day off. Mm. I've got a bunch of meetings, like you do.
Keeping busy.
Yeah, and we've also been really heavily modifying the show, but going over significant notes every day. Our director, Michael Weber, is still with us for this first week. Michael watches the show every night, and we go over it every day. And, I mean, like, last night we rewrote one of the whole routines and changed it up, and it was great. It was much better the way we rewrote it. And that's what makes this really fun. I mean, at one point during the new rewrite last night, I thought that we were done with this piece. But Michael Stevens clearly almost immediately was like, well, so we'll demonstrate this one more time for the audience. He didn't say that like that, but he moved to do that. And I understood that's what he was doing. And we just went into it. If you were watching it, it would have looked like a written bit. But it hinged on our ability to watch each other and sort of move with the flow. And that's mm-hmm. really, it's such a pleasure working with him on that regard. It's been very, very fun.
I have to imagine that was a concern going into this, because you guys, I mean, you've been working on the show for a long time, but you haven't really spent a lot of time with each other and kind of didn't have each other's rhythms down necessarily, or has that not been a problem?
We understood that we had a simpatico rhythm from the very first piece to camera we filmed. That was really clear. The moment we watched the footage back from the first time we filmed, which was, I think, in Michael's new Vsauce space down in Los Angeles, it was clear, like, oh, we have very different senses of timing and rhythm, but they're super complementary, and they augment each other in a really nice way. I mean, Norm, you saw, I mean, the Brachistochrome video, that was shot one-to-one. There's very little chaff and no retakes in there. And it came off as this really kind of lovely, lovely, lovely thing.
Yeah.
Well, he's an awesome performer. So I could see, like, I can see how that would, like, you, yeah. You guys
totally
would work together well.
Are you guys internally recording any of the shows just to review? Did you guys ever do that for the last tour?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. We record each show off the board, audio. To listen back to things that worked and didn't work. I listen to see where I'm over modulating or overdoing it, how to pull it back. And yeah, I get a lot out of listening back to pieces of each show.
Mm. Cool.
We also do, we do a meet and greet every night after the show. And it used to be for 50 people, but now it's 100 people for every show.
Oh, wow.
And far from being intense or tiring, I find it super, super invigorating. I just love that interaction after the show. For some reason, I mean, people are so enthusiastic, and there's also now this really awesome mix of people who grew up on Vsauce and people who grew up on Mythbusters, and some of them are the same and some of them are totally different. So it's lovely seeing the different responses we're getting. Lots of parents,
yeah, we
with
got
kids,
a,
lots of millennials. Go ahead, Norm. Sorry.
No, we got a small taste of that on the live shows we've done just in San Francisco. Just the after party and the meet and greets, or
yeah,
even at Comic Con. Yeah, yeah, it's really great to chat with people. You know,
invigorating.
For a half hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. It's a lovely conversation. And, you know, each person's standing there in line and they've got something they want to say, they want to impart. And I've stood on those lines. I've met people that I admire and wanted to let them know. And, you know, that we can have that interaction is really, it feels really lucky.
Cool.
I also have some good friends up in Boston, and they came out to the show last night. Michael Hawley, who runs EG, came out with his brother and his nephew.
Oh, cool.
My friend Adam Foss, who gave an amazing TED Talk last year that I tweeted earlier this year, a former prosecutor in Suffolk County, he came out with his roommate, and we hung out after the show for a while. This is the best part. I love seeing people that I know and love in all the cities that I'm going to. So tonight I'm in Newark. Rick Lyon's going to come out to the show tonight.
Cool.
In New York, my tons of my family and friends are coming to the show. That's awesome.
You didn't happen to bring any of your puppets out there, did you? I'm just looking around. I don't see them here.
I might have a puppet or two. in fact, you know, the guy who was in a beautiful Game of Thrones cosplay at New York Comic Con, I signed the ring box for him to propose to his wife. She made me a knitted, I'm holding it up on video right now. She made me a knitted Totoro that is super freaking cute. And she made one for Michael too. Super awesome. And I also got a little, beautiful no face phone charm, which is so awesome that I think I may like poke a hole in my iPhone leather case so I can have the phone charm on my iPhone.
You and teenage Japanese girls, Adam.
I have the same musical taste, so I might as well have the same phone taste.
We were at a place on the place that the escape room was had signs up for the San Francisco J-pop festival, which was a thing I didn't know existed, but I'm now suddenly very interested in. So anyway,
we do a lot of our stationery shopping at that wonderful stationery store in Japantown.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
you know, where else can you buy an eraser in the shape of a tiny little hamburger?
Well, and they have the super ultra mega fine pens, like the 0.08 micron or millimeter or whatever pens there, which are delightful.
You can really 0.08 micron.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
And speaking of Totoro and No Face, did you guys hear that Miyazaki is out of retirement?
Yes, for the sixth time.
Yes.
This is why I didn't respond to all the tweets when he announced his retirement last year. People are like, what do you think, A Savage? And I'm like, yeah, you know, we'll see.
It's like superhero deaths. You know they're going to come back. Totally. He's a real-life superhero. Yeah.
I'm really glad he's going to make another movie.
As long as he wants to keep making movies, I'll keep going to see them. So
precisely. He's not only a national treasure, but an international treasure.
We are also recording this podcast before the Oscars, which are tonight.
Right.
And any predictions?
I think Amy Adams wins Best Actress. I finally saw Arrival. That was amazing. Like, if she doesn't win, then I don't know what happens.
Oh, Will. Will's poking fun of the fact that she was accidentally listed as a nominee, but actually was not nominated, but she's still presenting.
Yeah.
Wait,
that's awkward.
What's that?
Yeah, Amy Adams was listed on the website as a nominee the day the Oscars nominations came out, but she wasn't nominated.
Oh, I didn't know that, but okay.
Whoops. Yeah.
That's terrible.
That's a terrible mistake to make.
It is.
Well, but I mean, if you're nominated, they call you, so she couldn't have not known, right?
It was, just for the public, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. But still. I don't have any predictions. I've seen a lot of the films this year. I loved La La Land. I absolutely loved it. I have not seen Moonlight. I'm dying to see it. I know that there's some great stuff. I'm not even sure I'm going to get to watch them tonight. If I got a direct feed, I could watch the West Coast feed up until showtime.
Hmm. Oh, right. You have to work.
Yeah, I've got work to do this evening, so it's likely that I'll get out of the show, out of the meet and greet, and find out lots of things. I'm sad because some good friends of mine in San Francisco are all having a viewing party this afternoon, and I can't be there. Oh, but maybe I can get Julia to Skype me in.
Yeah.
I'll just stand in the back, like, looking. Hi, everybody!
Hey, hope you all are...
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm buffering.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. A few weeks ago, I haven't talked about this yet, but I went to Adult Swim for Foo Stuff, and we did a live episode of a show that they made with one of the Aqua Teen characters. That we did the animation live with Foo, which was
Really
fun.
We hadn't talked about that.
No, so we did 2D animation, and we animated Carl from Aqua Teen Hunger Force, which he's from New Jersey. Fascinating character study, but we got the voice actor Dave. Willis, I think. I'm completely blanking, but Dave, the voice of Carl, came in and put on the vibe and animated Carl by moving his hands around and being crazy and took calls. They hooked him up to Skype and he took Skype calls as an animated character, which I'm sure somebody's done before, but never for the kind of the low budget that we were able to do it using Foo, and did an hour long show.
That's awesome.
Will, is that something people can watch on YouTube, like a capture of that?
Yeah. It was interesting, and I can talk a little bit about how it works if you guys are interested, or if not, that's also fine. If you look for Carl's pigskin, let's see what comes up. I can't remember what they called it. It has a really long name. It's on the Adult Swim site. So if
we'll
you go
put a
there,
link yeah. in the show notes, in the YouTube description.
I'm very near Carl. But we had a basically a feed. We set up a virtual studio. So we had our studio where Carl was walking around and interacting with the environment and stuff like that. And then we had multiple computers that were in that studio, and we basically set up drone cameras that you controlled with an Xbox 360 controller that you could fly around the space just like you would with an Inspire or Phantom 2 or whatever, that served as the 2D cameras for the actual show that went out on the stream and is on YouTube and all that stuff. So it was really interesting. It was interesting watching that work in a more real production environment. Too.
That's very super cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. One last thing. I don't know if we want to talk too much about this, but Ridley Scott and the team behind Alien Covenant just released a 4-minute featurette.
I watched it.
A prequel.
Ooh,
to the film Alien Covenant.
A prologue,
that's what it is. Yes, exactly. So kind of like for The Martian, where they had the featurette, the prologues, where it was before the crew, the Ares crew, went to Mars and went on their mission. This is before the crew of the Covenant goes into cryosleep. And it's called The Last Supper, and I think it's a really good short.
Oh, wow.
And I think that I really enjoyed it. I think the ensemble acting was terrific. That's first and foremost. I didn't realize James Franco was the captain. For some reason, that had somehow escaped me in all the work we'd done, mm-hmm. And all the stuff that I'd been paying attention to about Covenant. I also thought it was a return to form. You know, that much of the crew interaction scenes in the original Alien were improvised. Ridley put his actors in situations and gave them broad guidelines, and that felt like a return to form. It felt like a very naturalistic kind of dinner setting. And then, of course, they have the John Hurt quote of someone seems to have some difficulty. And then, of course, you know that Michael Fassbender is plausibly an android and he seems menacing for a second. I mean, all sorts of stuff about it was a harbinger that it had a real wink to the audience about what worked about Alien and where we're going with this, that I found very invigorating and exciting.
You guys, you might not be able to talk about this, but I know nothing about what you've seen so far. Is this going to be like the Alien to Aliens jump, where there's kind of a a genre or tone change from the first movie to this one, or do we know yet?
We have no idea about. Really none.
Yeah, none. We're going to look forward to seeing it in May. But yeah, I love that the studios are kind of putting these prologues out. And, you know, outside, it doesn't have to fit within the two-hour film or whatever the running time of the film is, but it gives a sense of the characters, right? And if you don't care about the characters, you're not going to care about any of the plot.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So the Adult Swim thing is pregame prognostications from the Pigskin Wizard, and Wizard is spelled W-Y-Z-Z-A-R-D, because, you know, why wouldn't you spell it with a Y and two Z's? But it's pretty funny. Carl's a little bit offensive, so it's probably not safe for the kiddos.
Awesome.
All right.
Awesome. Well, I think we're going to let you get back to work, Adam. We're going to try doing this again, doing this video thing. I hope, crossing fingers, it all worked out. I've been doing my best miming, talking to floating screens.
I've been trying to look to the same direction when I talk to you guys, so, you know, I don't know. We'll see how that goes.
I'm just looking at the screen, so I hope it works. You will see in my video that I've got the Yeti microphone is giant, right in frame.
Mine's right here. Adam, if people want to find out about the tour, see if they can catch up with you while you're on the road. Let's see. I think New Jersey will be done by the time people hear this, but where can they go?
BrainCandyLive.com. We've got 34 more shows to do, the show is. We did our fifth show last night. It's just getting better and cooler every single night. And the audiences have been stunning and amazing. We have sometimes some rhetorical back and forth with the audience, and it's hilarious because part of the rhetorical thing for a science demo is, of course, you want people to give the wrong answer so that you can tell them the right answer. It's not working with our audiences. It's always like 10-year-old kids yelling out exactly the right answer. And that's fantastic. That's being incorporated right into the body of the show.
That's rad.
Yeah.
You need to ask him impossible questions, Adam. Give him no chance to give the right answer. I'm always lying.
I cannot positively assert this sentence. It's the show is so much fun to perform. I'm having such a great time out here. And also, by the way, if this tour isn't passing through your city, pay attention. We are currently routing the fall tour, and I'll have dates and cities for that in the next few weeks. And it's very likely we're not going to repeat the same cities we just did. So it's going to be a whole new spate of cities and, lots of parts of the country that are feeling neglected right now will get some attention.
Great.
Okay.
All right. Awesome. Uncomfortable pause. I think that's a reasonable place to stop.
All right. We will see you hopefully next week then. Thanks for everyone's time, and we'll see everyone later.
Have a good morning, right, guys. I'm going to go put on pants now.
Yeah, me too.